Welcome to Software Gone Wild. Today, revisiting an interesting project called Napalm. And it has nothing with burning the things around you, although sometimes you might want to do that when you have a particular issue with a switch or a firewall. I forgot what it stands for, and that's why I have David Barroso and Aliza Jasinska, the original authors of Napalm, with me to explain what it is all about. We did a podcast with them a long while ago, and at that time it was a very early stage project. So, David, Aliza, what has happened in the meantime, and how far did you guys get?
Oof, it happens a lot. I mean, we started with a few drivers, and by drivers, I mean support of a few vendors. And now we have like three times the amount of supported operating systems, and the community has grown a lot, like a lot of new contributors and new methods. It's been great since last time we talked.
Okay, so let's start with the basics. What does Napalm stand for?
Napalm starts for network. Let me try to remember, because it was an early joke, and now I don't remember myself either. It was network automation and programmability. Oh, do you remember?
Abstraction layer.
Oh yeah, with multi-vendor
or multi-vendor environment.
Multi-vendor support.
Yeah, yeah. The thing is that, I mean, the name came because I was super pissed as screen scraping and doing scripts with like for multiple vendors. So I was just joking with my colleagues at the time, like, oh, I'm just going to burn this with Napalm. And then the project started, like, oh, I have to call it Napalm. And then just the rest, just like, okay, what could that stand for? So it's a bit of
The usual reverse engineering.
Yeah,
stuff.
Correct. Yeah, that's how it works.
Okay, so when we last talked, you were more or less pushing configurations to the boxes, right?
Yeah, the early start was mostly trying to, like, I had a network at that time, which was mostly comprised of Juniper boxes, Arista boxes, some MySXR. I had a couple of firewalls from Fortinet as well, and it was just a mess, like, to push configuration. You had a script to push configuration to one device, a script to push configuration to another device. So the idea was just to build some sort of abstracted API that could deal with all of them using the same workflow. And that's more or less how it started. Then we realized that it was could be interesting to start getting data from the devices as well. Like, oh, let's get, like, something simple, like the serial number, the model, the number of ports it has, the type of ports. Then it grew into, yeah, interface statistics and stuff like that. And now you can actually get a lot of different things, from BGP information to VLAN information, VRFs, just all sorts of things.
All structured in the same output format.
So you can get BGP neighbors from Arista, Cisco, Juniper, Nexus, iOS XR, all in the same data structure.
Yeah, correct. It's the same command. Like, you just connect to your device, and then it's just like, okay, get BGP neighbors, and then you get a dictionary that looks exactly the same no matter which vendor you're dealing with.
When you talk about commands, Napalm is a library, right?
Yeah, it's a Python library. So you can write scripts using Napalm. You can even use the Python shell if you don't want to write a script. Like, you could just, I mean, kind of similar to a CLI. Or you could use things like Ansible or Salt with Napalm, just talking with the device.
Okay, so to recap the big picture, Napalm is a library in Python.
Yeah.
It allows you to manage device configurations and get operational data. And it has plugins or whatever for Ansible and Salt.
Yes, correct.
Now, what can you do with the configurations?
Well, the configuration, it has a few basic commands. So, for example, you can do something like, there are two configuration modes. One is what we call the replace, where you can send a full configuration to the device, and the device will make sure that only the configuration that you send is present on the device. So that's great if you can generate the configuration of your device entirely, because then you can ensure that the device has exactly what you want. Like if the configuration deviated for some reason, because it's an old version of the configuration, or because someone connected to the device and did some manual changes, with this replace method, you can ensure that you detect that and remediate it. The other thing that you can do is just a merge, which is more the traditional way of dealing with things, where you just tell the device what you want to do. Like, here, I want to configure this new BGP neighbor, and that will just be executed on the device. You can also do more like Junos-like commands, like, okay, I don't want to commit the configuration, I just want to send it to the device and get a diff of the configuration. Like, just tell me what's the difference between what I sent you and what you have. And if you like it, you can commit, or if you don't like it, you can just discard the configuration.
You can replace configuration, you can merge new stuff with the existing configuration, or you can do a diff.
Correct.
How can you replace a configuration on a device that doesn't support that, like Nexus OS?
Nexus OS, as a matter of fact, they support it, if I recall correctly. Like, not everything is supported everywhere. That's just a disclaimer. I think that NXOS is actually supported, though. I could actually check very, very quickly. But the thing is that we don't try to make anything super crazy. So if the operating system behind it doesn't support something and it's not reasonable to implement it, and by reasonable I mean we don't want to implement something super crazy that might break someone's network. So the replace is a good example. Like, if NXOS doesn't support that operation, we are not going to implement it, mostly because we prefer to give an error to the user and say, like, hey, this is not supported, then try to work around it and break something.
There are a few drivers, though, where it has been kind of, you know, hacked around in a creative way to make things possible that out of the box are not really possible.
Yeah, that I implemented it for Fortinet.
Exactly.
And but I implemented that on the underlying library that was, it's called PyFG, actually. And that one was crazy. I mean, I literally compiled the configuration for FortiOS, so I can build a model of the configuration, and then I can just model the running config, the candidate config, and generate a diff, which is pretty safe to apply. But I did that once, and I never do it again. That was just too crazy.
I also like the way the iOS one was done with, well, I think it changed by now, or is it still with SCP?
Oh, yeah, but that's because iOS actually supports the config replace. You just have to push the configuration via SCP and then load it. And going back to NXOS, I was checking, because we have a page where you can check which features we have and which operating system supports which ones and which aren't. And NXOS, for example, supports the config replace. I think they call it checkpoints. And so you can send a new configuration, tell it that it's a checkpoint, and then tell NXOS to push it. But the guy that really knows how this works is Jason, so it would be better to ask him how it works.
Yeah, so I guess all the different drivers right now are being kind of contributed by a group of different people, and everyone who was working on their driver knows the ins and outs of everything. And then Napalm in the end kind of integrates all of them into one system.
Yeah, I mean, at this point, I mean, we support so many drivers that it's actually impossible to keep track of all of them. I mean, it's a lot of people working on different drivers. Like, Kirk is mostly working on IOSXE. Mircea is working a lot on Junos and XR as well. I'm working mostly on EOS. Jason was working on XOS. So it's a lot of people working on different drivers. I mean, at the end of the day, it requires some expertise to know all the ins and outs of them.
Yeah, there was Camille in the very beginning who contributed the IBM driver.
Yeah, I did that.
And there's a bunch of drivers that are, people are starting to work on them right now. So there's a bunch of stuff still coming up.
IBM, like IBM mainframe?
No, they make switches. They're Lenovo switches. I didn't know them either.
Me neither.
But yeah, apparently they make switches as well.
So how many people are working on Napalm now? It looks like a really nice community effort.
What I call the council, it's a bunch of people right now. I mean, it's Elisa, it's me, it's Mircea, it's Jason, Kirk, and it's also Gabriel. And that's kind of like the main core of people working there. There is a lot of other people that it's starting to contribute more and more, and that I would love to have them as part of this council as well, which is the people that deals mostly with issues and PRs. But yeah, it's growing. I mean, we went from me and Elisa only to a bunch of people.
And recently you had a hackathon, right?
Yeah, that was interesting. Yeah, I mean, a lot of people was asking on Slack, like, oh yeah, I want to get started with this, but I'm not sure how to do it. They wanted to start contributing, using the tool. So I figured like, oh no, maybe we can organize a hackathon and just put together some event where we just help people doing the first contribution to the project and see what it leads.
And what were the results?
It was really interesting. We were like during an entire weekend online working. I think we were around 20 different people. And yeah, we got a lot of pull requests coming to the project. Some of them were already approved and merged into the upstream repos, and some of them are still in progress, but went pretty fine. We got a lot of different things done there.
From the initial few operating systems, how far did this thing grow? How many vendors do you support right now?
The four original were EOS, Juno, CyoXR, and FortiOS. And now we have, in addition, we have IBM, NXOS, we have iOS, Pluribus, and Palo Alto NOS as well. And we are working now on adding, which I hope it will be added very, very soon, Brocade as well.
Oh, nice. What about Cisco ASA?
We don't support it yet, at least. Mm-hmm. I don't think anyone is actually working on it. Like, most of the new drivers come from people that actually has the need of them. And so far, no one has contributed that driver.
Okay, so I will not comment on that fact.
This is completely driven by the community. So if no one actually has the need of something, we are not going to spend time of it. Like, time is very limited resource.
Of course. Coming from the what it is to where should I use it? Who's using Napalm today and how are they using it?
It's hard to tell because no one is actually publicly speaking. Like, I can guess who is using it because I can see their organizations when they send the PR. I don't know. I mean, I can speak from a couple of people. Like, I know that Spotify is using it because that's how everything started, actually. I mean, it started there when I was working for them.
There's Cloudflare using it big time.
Yeah, correct. So Spotify was using it for pushing configuration, and then they moved their entire monitoring system to use Napalm. So they moved from SNMP to that. And Cloudflare is using it heavily as well for everything. For deploying config, I think they are also doing stuff like gathering state from the network, like BGP neighbors and if they're up and down and how many routes they're receiving and stuff like that.
They were also the ones who contributed the Salt integration. They do all that with Salt.
Yeah, correct. They use Salt for that. And I use it at Fastly as well for both pushing config and getting state as well.
Of course.
I don't know. I mean, the rest of the people, I can guess, but I don't want to start mentioning companies and then get sued by them.
I haven't had a chance to use it in a while, but I'm looking forward to maybe do some stuff with it again soon.
But let's say there are a few cloud companies or cloud-sized companies that they have been, at least some engineers working there have been sending code.
Okay, so from the perspective of someone who might be considering to use Napalm, you think it will be there for a long time. It's not something that will just disappear tomorrow because people will lose interest.
No, I don't think it will disappear. I mean, there are a lot of decently sized companies that they're using it for their day-to-day operations. So if any, then we'll keep working on it. And I plan to keep working on the project for the foreseeable future. Unless something really dramatic happens, I'll be working on it.
Oh, one other thing I wanted to ask you before going back to the technical waters. How do you get the operational data like BGP neighbors off a device? Are you still doing screen scraping or have we progressed beyond that?
It depends. I mean, we get what we can. The idea of Napalm is to be able, so the user can ignore those bits. But of course, as we are developing the tool, we have to deal with what we have to deal. So it depends. Like some devices might give you structured data. So we use that, obviously, because it's easier to work with. But if something doesn't support structured data, we will just screen scrape it and format it and give it to the user in a formatted way. If only for that, that's already useful for anyone wanted to check device data.
Absolutely. So, for example, in Cisco IOS case, you would just do show IP BGP neighbor and pull the numbers off that report.
Yeah, correct. You just regex everything and get the data out in a formatted way.
Using text FSM for that or just regular expressions?
We're using both. When it's easier, I mean, where it's easier to use text FSM because it's like a big blob of text, we use that. And when it's easier because it's just a couple of lines. Like sometimes, like for example, if you do a show VLAN on a switch, most of the time you can just split the lines by spaces and then you get like, okay, the first block is the VLAN ID, the second is the name, and the third is the ports. So it just, whatever, it's easier.
And then on other platforms, you have things like NetConf or on Nexus OS, you have show commands that already produce the JSON data. So there's not much to do there, right?
Yeah, correct. I mean, if we get structured data, we only shuffle it around so we can present the same data structure no matter of the vendor.
But you still have to transform the data you get from the device into your data model.
Yeah, correct. The idea is that you can get the same data no matter the vendor and in the same way. So if you're writing code like, oh, I want to check my for each BGP neighbor on the device, I want to do this. So you can actually code that no matter the vendor. So that's why we are reformatting the data so you get it in the same way, no matter if it's EOS or Junos or IXE car. Just those three particular examples, they all return like structured data, but they are complete different formats. So we just unify the format so you can just code once.
Oh, have to ask, are you using OpenConfig data models or your own data structures?
The funny thing is that we started doing this before OpenConfig was like out in the wild. So we started doing our own thing. And we are still doing our own thing, but we are actually working on using the ITF and OpenConfig YAML models. So I'm actually working now on integrating those YAML models into Napalm. And then we will probably rewrite some of the methods to return, instead of our own data, just return some ITF or OpenConfig models. So today it's our own data structure, but we would like at least to start returning more standard models.
So you will probably keep your data structure internally, otherwise you would have to rewrite all the drivers, right?
We won't remove the current methods with the current data structure because that might break some code from some people and we don't want to do that. But we will have like a new equivalent method, like instead of get BGP neighbor, let's say, we could call it like get young BGP neighbor, something like that. And that will... It might reuse code from the previous get BGP neighbors, but it will just return the data in an OpenConfig or IETF format.
So you will not do translation between two data models. You will actually write new code that will get the data in the new format.
Yeah, we might reuse, like copy-paste all code, because at the end, like at some point when we feel like it, we might have like a Napalm 2 version where we will just remove all the legacy methods.
The other good reason for rewriting it, if eventually the devices might support the OpenConfig format in itself, then there won't be much rewriting in the first place. So using that straight away definitely makes more sense.
So you will go like, if I get OpenConfig data, good. Otherwise, I have to do some crazy stuff.
Yeah, the idea is that if as vendors start supporting OpenConfig, we can just be the transport. Like, yeah, sure. Like, I don't know, the new IOXXR model supports all this OpenConfig format for the BGP neighbors. So then we just provide the transport. Like, okay, get BGP neighbors. So here are the young object coming from IOXXR. Mm-hmm. And if something else doesn't support it, then we do the translation. But from the user perspective, it should be transparent. Like, they shouldn't really care. Well, they should care, because if they care, they might force vendors to implement them. But
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I always tell people that, you know, vote with your wallet.
Yeah, correct.
Move. There are other vendors out there. You have a choice.
Yeah, there is choice nowadays. It was harder to get options, but now it's getting better.
As you said, Napalm is a Python library, and I can write a Python script that uses it. But what if I am not a programmer? So the most I could master would be maybe pulling a blob of code off GitHub and put it into my Ansible modules directory. How could I use Napalm with Ansible?
There's Ansible libraries that integrate with the Python library, so it's a matter of copying the Ansible part, and you can use it out of Ansible.
It's actually only two models, which are very, very flexible. Like, one is just to deal with configuration, which is called Napalm install config, if I remember correctly. And that one, you can just give it like a file, like, here's my configuration file, and I want you to either merge or replace the configuration, and then it will just do it for you. So you can just write your own playbook to just generate the config using Jinja templates, as if you were just doing Apache configuration, for example. So it's no magic whatsoever. And then you just give it the file to the Napalm module, and Napalm will just take care of deploying the configuration for you. And the other module is the Napalm getfax, which is just one single module where you can just tell the module, I want to get BGP neighbors, or I want to get interface statistics, or I want to get LLDP neighbors. And it just will give you the data from the box in a structured format. So you can use it on further place or just print it on the screen.
So in reality, you have like 10 different get something methods in Napalm library. But the way you present this to Ansible is, you just have this one get facts action. And in the action, you can specify which facts you want to gather.
Yeah,
correct. If a method is on the Python library called like get interfaces, you just have to remove the get and just call the module saying, give me the interfaces. And that's it. Simple as that.
And that gets into an Ansible result that you have to register, or do you write directly into Ansible facts and I could just use that in subsequent tasks?
You register it as an Ansible fact.
In the specific format, though, so you have to look up how the return is formatted.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, what I always do is I do this thing and the next thing is a debug task. So it prints out everything and then I reverse engineer what needs to be done.
Exactly. And then you can start iterating over interfaces or neighbors, adding things, etc., etc.
Yeah, correct.
By the way, Ansible has added a lot of support for almost exactly the same things in versions 2.1 and now 2.2. So do you see them as, I don't know, orthogonal or competitors? What's your relationship with Ansible guys?
I don't know. I mean, I know Peter Sprigada personally, like I have met him a couple of times. And I don't know. I mean, on a personal level, I think it's good relation. I mean, I don't think they're competitors. I think that, I mean, they're just doing a different thing. They have been doing this thing from the beginning where you manage your Linux operating system as the distro that it is. So, for example, you're installing Apache. You don't have an install Apache action. You have like a jump Apache or dep Apache or whatever. So you have to know which operating system you're dealing with. If they prefer to have a tighter control of the operating system that they are dealing with, as they do with the network as well, because you don't have like a run command. You have a iOS command, EOS command, Junos command.
They're not abstracting it.
Yeah, so they have, I don't know, they have this philosophy of having a tighter control. If it's great if you are a single vendor shop, I think, because you know what you're dealing with. But if you're in a multi-vendor shop and you have to start like, okay, this playbook is for Juniper, this playbook is for iOS, this playbook is for iOS XR, this playbook is for whatever. I mean, I don't know. I guess it's different philosophies. I prefer to do one thing that works for everything. But
you have to use tricks to get their modules to work in a multi-vendor environment.
Yeah, my problem is when you have all these playbooks or scripts or whatever, that you have one for each vendor, like now you want to change something on that playbook, you have to remember all the different playbooks that you have for all the different vendors and change them all. So it's just, you're just duplicating stuff. So you have to remember, like, oh yeah, I had this amount of script where I was doing this. So I have to remember to change them all.
Or maybe you could do some creative inventory to reuse things there, but it would be building an abstraction around what they have.
Yeah, it looks like they are implementing more like a lower level interface, right, where you can tightly control every individual device, but you can't abstract.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're doing a great job because they're reaching a lot of people that never heard of Ansible or automation or things like that before. I mean, people are starting to talk about it at least. So I don't know. I don't see it as a competitor, mostly because I couldn't care less. I mean, I'm an open source project. I'm not trying to monetize this. I just do it for the sake of the community. So, I mean, I don't know.
Okay, which brings me to the next topic. So this is an open source effort and everything is on GitHub, right?
Yes, correct.
And at the moment, you don't have any idea of ever monetizing this?
No, I don't think that will happen.
So I can just go and pull the code and start playing with it.
Yeah, I mean, the code is Apache. So even if I wanted to, even if we wanted to monetize it, like the code is Apache license, so that means that you can just fork it and go your own. Even if you think that we are not nice to play with or whatever, you can always fork it and just have a parallel project. So, I mean, just yet another open source project.
And the URL to use on GitHub is napalm-automation, right?
Yes, that is correct. All the repos are there. So we have one repo per driver, so you don't have to install all of them if you don't want to. And all of them are under that URL.
Ah, so you can install just the drivers for the devices you need. You don't have to pull down the whole thing.
Correct. So if you want to have like a small installation footprint, you can just say like, okay, pip install napalm Junos, napalm EOS, and then you get just the code necessary for those particular devices. You don't get all of them.
Now, if I am not a startup or a web services company, if I'm a traditional enterprise and I like napalm, and now I go to my boss and tell my boss, hey, I've heard this great thing on this podcast and I would want to use it. And the boss goes like, well, can you get support for that? What's the answer?
I'm sure Elisa can fix something.
Oh, that's true.
Not really.
I mean, I don't know if you're going to get paid support from anyone. Like maybe there is someone that does professional services. I could probably think of a couple of people if someone would ask me. And I'm certainly going to help answering questions, and the same goes for the rest of the people in the project. But
it's the same as with any open source project, really. You know, you gotta invest some engineering time into it if you want to use it, and that kind of goes for everything else we use out there as well.
Yeah, that's always the case, but sometimes in enterprise environments, the boss wants to have support contract with someone, just because.
I'm sure I can find like someone doing professional services that could help with this. Like I know some people that are really good at Python and they have been working with napalm, so I'm pretty sure I could refer to some of them.
Yeah, we can recommend someone.
Okay, perfect. And if I don't need support, but I would like to ask questions, what can I do then?
The easiest is just go to the GitHub repo and just open an issue. Like, hey, yeah, I'm having this issue, or I don't understand how this works. And I say the easiest because, I mean, it's not going to interrupt anyone, and a lot of different people can respond. Otherwise, you can go to...
Or there's the Slack channel.
Yeah, correct. You can go to the Slack channel, network to code. There is a link on the napalm, on the main napalm repo. Or you can just send me an email or Elisa or whoever. Like, we are all reachable.
I think there's also a mailing list. We don't use the mailing list a lot.
Yeah, Slack is killing mail.
Yeah.
If I want to go down this last path, how can I reach you guys?
If you go to the main napalm repo, my mail should be there.
They are, mine too.
Otherwise,
Let me check.
Yeah, they are under maintainer.
Oh yeah, so you don't attract any spam with that? How do you deal with that?
Spam filters.
Yeah, they're very reliable. Yeah, sure.
No, I don't get that much spam nowadays, and I'm just saying this, and someone will start spamming just for talking too much.
We don't read email; it's all on Slack.
Ha ha ha.
So you prefer Slack over email, I guess.
We are talking about napalm. I prefer issues because that might make someone else answer, like Mircea or Kirk or Jason or whoever is looking at it at that time. It's just going to be probably faster for you. If you ask on Slack, I mean, I might be sleeping or someone will might be just busy doing something else. So.
And someone else might find it, exactly.
Yeah, and if you open an issue, then the whole thing is documented, right? And you can even search across older issues, which is slightly harder.
Yeah.
Anything else I forgot to ask you?
Are we going to do another hackathon?
Oof, that's a good one. That was an immense amount of work, actually. So I don't know if I want to do it ever again.
I can't imagine.
I know that Mircea wanted to plan something. I don't remember when exactly because he was doing it very unofficially on the Slack channel. I think it was somewhere late October or maybe early November. I don't remember. I guess we will be organizing some other official hackathon at some point.
He mentioned some weekend where he's going to be working on this and he can help out if people want to join in.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess we will be organizing some other hackathon at some point, but I don't know when. I mean, the last one was like, I don't know, a month ago. So let's just rest some.
Yeah, it was something like that, yeah. I know that it was crazy. I was just flying back home and putting kids to bed and then logging in and doing my part.
Oh, and thank you, Ivan, for dropping by at the hackathon. That was nice.
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah, you gave me like half an hour and I was done in 10 minutes or so, right?
Yeah, that's because it's automated.
That's it. Okay, so thank you, David and Elisa, for this short update. I hope we'll do another podcast on Napalm and explain everyone how now you have 35 different GET methods and you support 25 vendors.
Are there that many?
Yeah, there are firewalls, there are load balancers, there are VPN concentrators, there are managed hubs, cable modems, there's Microtik.
Oh, yeah, wasn't someone working on that?
Yeah, we have someone working on that already.
Oh, okay, so that's covered. And you've been listening to Software Gone Wild, a podcast on everything software-defined. You want to listen to more episodes, go to podcast.ipspace.net or just start at sdn.ipspace.net where you'll find everything software-defined. Well, not really. You'll find real-life perspectives on what the vendors are trying to sell you as software-defined. Because, you know, we've been talking about software this whole podcast, but in reality, what we are doing with Napalm is we are configuring hardware devices.